through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. This is my style of show, I gotta say. This show has absolutely flown by because we've had great topics. We've had great discussion all day long. I hope it goes this way all week. So, as we do every day at 2 o'clock, we've got our free agent profiles. Now, today's is interesting because we've got our blueprint for the Seahawks to get back to the 2020 Super Bowl. And just to go through the list of criteria with you once again, we've got pass rush, offensive line, weapons around Russell Wilson, philosophy slash scheme, and team speed. And the next guy we're going to be talking about here does not exactly fit all of those, definitely fits one. Let's take a look.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's Offseason Profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
We are finally turning to the most important position of all football, and that is the offensive line, the big boys up front. And specifically, we are looking at Mike Iupati. At 6'5", 330 pounds, this guy is a body mover. He is a guy at age 32, turning 33. He is a player that has definitely passed his prime, but still can contribute and give meaningful snaps and play it at a level that is good enough for what the Seahawks are looking for. He is a good overall player. Although Pro Football Focus graded him at 60.3 overall, I would say that out of the recent group of guards that they have had in the last couple years, Mike Iupati is definitely towards the top. And I think that Mike Iupati is a, in terms of point of attack in the run game, if he has a body in front of him, he's great at the point of attack. He can move guys. He's solid in pass blocking. He's not great because his lateral quickness and overall speed has just diminished over time. But I think that with Mike Iupati, in terms of what they were able to get out of him, was pretty good, since the fact that when they signed him, that he was injury-plagued and that he ended up starting 15 games this year and unfortunately ended the season with a neck injury that kept him out of the final three games of the season. So once again, finished the year injured. And so it wasn't great from that standpoint of finishing the year off like that. But ultimately, the Seahawks were able to get more out of him than what he's been able to produce in his the last 3 years, actually, with the Arizona Cardinals. The former first-round pick in 2010, a 10-year veteran, was a one-year, $2.75 million contract. To me, I like Mike Iupati. He's cheap. He's one of the better options that they've gone with in the last couple years, like I said. The unfortunate things about him in terms of where he fits on this roster is he's not young. He's a cheap one-year solution, a patchwork situation. He lacks the mobility to get to the second level in the run game, very much past his prime. But ultimately, with Mike Iupati, you have to look at this and say, what is the best situation for the Seahawks offensive line moving forward? And really, it's going to determine on what you do with your guard spots. And if you're going to leave one guard situation open, and you've got DJ Fluker currently under contract, I think Mike Iupati is a candidate of which you move on from, and you try to develop from within, and you try to create competition. Although I like Mike Iupati, I think this is a guy that you have to move on from and let go if you're going to keep DJ Fluker still on this roster.
You know, every single time we come to a guy who's a little bit older, whether it's somebody who's on the Seahawks or it's somebody who's out there, you talk about, you know, whether or not they still have something left in the tank or if they don't. I think about this quote from Dumb and Dumber. Curtis, turn down the music real quick.
Hey, I guess they're right. Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
That's great.
It's heartless, Tom.
He's still got something left in the tank.
He does, but it's a matter of, you know, especially with that neck injury, what is it going to be? And to me, this opens up a really interesting conversation about the offensive line in general, which was number two in terms of our list of priorities for the Seahawks to get back to the Super Bowl in 2020. You have to start instead of patchworking the situation and trying to give Russell essentially, you know, a few good players. I mean, Dwayne Brown is a great left tackle, but everybody else, you're essentially giving him kind of scraps up front and telling him to make the best of a bad situation. And he's been able to do it for multiple years, but now I feel like you're at that time in this phase where it's really important to start surrounding him with solid offensive line play and guys that you can count on, not just for 1 year, but multiple years moving forward. And Pete Carroll said that he wanted to start creating some continuity. And to be able to get that done, you have to start investing in young people. You have to start investing in guys like Jamarco Jones. I think if you're going to let Mike Iupati walk, you have to allow a competition with Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes. There is no way, absolutely no way, that I look at it, I look at the offensive line with confidence and say that I could play Phil Haynes and Jamarco Jones in those two starting guard positions moving forward. It is a competition between those two young guys, which youngster steps up in that role, in that position, and then you need to build veteran offensive line presence in that other guard position. And so how they manage that is going to be really interesting. Do they cut Fluker because of the cap hit savings that they could have, which is over $3 million, and bring back Mike Iupati, like, which I said is only going to be a one-year, $2.7 million contract? Or do you let Mike Iupati walk? And I think that's a really interesting discussion, and I'm going to be fascinated to see what the Seahawks end up doing with that.
It's a really complicated puzzle. I mean, geez, you got to... I assume every year when they look for help at offensive line, whether it's in the draft or in free agency, they're looking for the best talent that they could find. It's not like they're saying, all right, well, we're going to sacrifice talent here just to save money. When they look at guys like Phil Haynes, Jamarco Jones, they're looking at those guys to be permanent parts of that offensive line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you want to have the confidence that they can play those spots. But to me, I think it wouldn't be very smart of those guys, especially with Phil Haynes. Phil Haynes, we saw one piece of action with him in terms of a game, and that was filling in for the Green Bay Packers game. Now, I liked what I saw, but that's not a sample size big enough for me to be able to walk away from and say, you know what, Phil Haynes is going to be our next guard of the future along with Jamarco Jones.
That's not his fault, though, either.
It's not, but it's the reality. It's the reality of that situation. And I don't feel comfortable walking into next year saying, okay, if you keep Justin Britt in, you know, your best case scenario, you have Justin Britt, Dwayne Brown, and then you have two young rookies. Jamarco Jones, I feel very comfortable with. Filled in quite a bit this year.
Yeah, because you've seen more of him.
Exactly. But I've seen more of him, and I've seen him play well. I think that, to me, I'm more comfortable in that situation and trying to invest in a good veteran offensive lineman in that other guard position.
Yeah, you know, Jake, your profile highlights exactly why I think it's a really interesting offseason for the Seahawks offensive line, because going right from Dwayne Brown, who you know you're going to have there, and I think he's entering, what is he entering, the last year of his deal also? I think his was originally a two-year deal. You've got Mike Iupati, unrestricted free agent, Justin Britt, who's under contract. Could he be a cap casualty? You don't know. He's coming off a serious ACL injury, but has been a reliable starter there at center. Then you've got DJ Fluker, and you've got Jermaine Ifedi, also an unrestricted free agent, who will likely, I think, in my opinion, find a deal elsewhere. So you're looking for some consistency along your offensive line always, and for a lot of talent there. And guys like Mike Iupati, despite being older, do bring talent. But I think the use of patchwork was interesting by you, because that's exactly what teams often have to do. The less money you have to spend, the lower draft picks you have, you're patchworking a lot of stuff because it's expensive. You have to sacrifice a lot in terms of a win-loss record to get money to spend and to get high draft picks.
If you're going
to
spend...
And it's expensive to do anything outside of just patchwork stuff. It's why the 49ers... They reached a Super Bowl and they had lots of great talent on their defensive line. Well, they also really struggled for 5 years and racked up a lot of draft picks and cap space. And a lot of that comes at a cost. So what the Seahawks are looking at now is a guy who could be affordable. He'll probably still be affordable, could still help them. But do you take a risk with a younger guy, knowing that if you bring back Iupati, you probably only have him for one more year and you're just putting off that issue once again?
I don't like that idea at all. But I don't like the idea of spending money at all on free agents like Jamarcus Webb and that other guy, Jokel.
Right.
Luke Jokel.
If you're going to go and spend money, to me,
it better be on quality.
I want quality. I want front line. I want them to go after a Joe Thuney from the Patriots. I want guard play that can actually make impact and a guy that you're not just signing for a year.
Here's the thing, you're
signing him for multiple down the line because he can still play.
Here's the thing about Jokel, though. Tom Cable told everybody that for the last half of the year before the Seahawks got him, he was the best guard in the entire league. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
So
I remember
just had bad intel.
I remember Cable. At some point, the legend grew greater than what was reality.
Right.
And Cable and that whole organization thought that Cable could work wonders, that he could take any player. It didn't matter who it was. It could be a Luke Jokel coming off his ACL tear and still not fully healthy, and he could turn him into an all-pro. Jamarcus Webb, you know, the list goes on and on.
I mean, Jamarcus Webb never even saw the field.
No.
At least Jokel was on it.
No, I was there in that locker room. The guy never made it out of the training room. So it's one of those situations that it's frustrating to watch year after year and have a quarterback that's playing at the highest level not get the protection that you would want, you know, moving forward. I just think that it is time to invest at least in a couple positions, and obviously we've got a couple interesting names still to go here in the next couple days where we're going to really dive into this offensive line and really get to the bottom of what we think they should do there.
I mean, the problem is you only have so much money to spend, and your greatest position of need, which we've all agreed is at pass rush defensive end, is the most expensive outside of quarterback to replace. So if you've got $60 million, you still need to pay your draft picks, you still need to pay, let's say, Clowney or someone like Clowney, then that's, what, $20 million there, $22 million. So you're working with $30 to $40 million. Maybe a little bit more than that, and now you've got to get, do you want to get someone a free agent for your secondary? Do you want to get another defensive lineman? So when you look at the offensive line, you've got at least two guys who are unrestricted. Well, you have two guys who are unrestricted free agents, three with Fant. I just have a hard time believing you can keep all five guys there going into 2019. So you've got to spend money there too. It's just you start, what looks like a lot of cap space starts spreading itself pretty thin when you start addressing both lines.
No question. And it's going to be tough. But I, over the next couple of days, as we really dive into it with this offensive line, I really feel like I've got a strong solution for the Seahawks to be able to get both of that done.
You guys want to go through some NFL headlines?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Drew Brees announced this morning that he's going to return to the Saints in 2020. So that's one domino that never fell.
There you go.
Never had a chance to fall.
The
never
legend.
Never even got set up.
One of the GOATs is back. One of my all-time favorite players, Drew Brees, is coming back once again. I am very excited to hear that. The league is great with Drew Brees in it.
Well, I thought so too. I just wanted to see. I want to see all these guys go somewhere else,
right?
Just to see how weird it is.
The interesting thing is, and this is a question I'll pose to you guys: do you think it's in the best interest of the New Orleans Saints to bring Drew Brees back after what we've seen the last two seasons? You think it's in their best interest?
I think that they went into they don't have a high round draft pick where they can pick up a quarterback. Maybe someone can fall to them. They've also got lots of good young players like Michael Thomas. They're still operating in a window where they are going to be one of the favorites to get to the Super Bowl, certainly get into the postseason next year. And I think as long as you're one of those teams, you can take advantage each and every year. Even if it's something where, you know, hey, you have 1 year, this might be too much to spend on one player, or this is a player who isn't going to stick around. When you have that window, you go for it.
Yeah, I think that it's good business for them to keep the face of that franchise around. Certainly while he can still produce the way he has. If he dropped off to the level that, say, Eli Manning did, not that it was all Eli's fault. He had bad offensive line play, couldn't, and he's not mobile. But while Brees is still playing the way he is, I think it's good business for the organization, to their fans, to hold on to him. Like Stacey said, they still have a window where they can win, and they can let him go later on.
Yeah, he's a guy that can still operate at a high level
when
he's at his best. The problem is with Drew Brees over the last 2 years, as you watched in 2018, that actually he really got fatigued to the point where he could barely push the ball down the field. You guys remember that? That was a major concern for the Saints at the end of the year. Now in 2019, he gets injured, you know, midway through the year. Teddy Bridgewater has to play. So it's not just a, you know, it's not his production necessarily because he's still producing at a high level. It's more of physically, can he endure a full entire season and get them to the Super Bowl?
Is Taysom Hill still going to be around next year? Or is he going to try to force his way out?
That's a great question. I think because Drew Brees is coming back, he's more, when you talk about free agents being influenced by others, I think Taysom Hill coming back to the Saints because of Drew Brees is definitely a possibility.
I think it's more likely.
Because
he wants to be a starter.
He does.
It's like, you know, down puppy.
Yes, it is. I think that there was some strong talk
while Drew Brees was...
You know, his future was unsure, but now that things are settling in, I think that, you know, Taysom has really appreciated the chance to play with him and what Sean Payton has been able to do with him. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, but it'll be really interesting to see what he decides to do, and I think he'd be more leaning towards coming back to New Orleans.
All right, this headline is in here. I didn't even see it before. I saw it this morning, though. Our president, Donald Trump, has pardoned former 49ers owner Eddie DeBartolo. Now, Eddie DeBartolo was one of the best owners in the sport for about 20 years until he got in trouble for trying to, what, pay off the governor of Louisiana to get a gambling
trying
license?
Trying to get, like, a riverboat casino, I believe.
Right. Here's my question. When it comes to presidential pardons, why is it always, like, rich people?
Or turkeys.
Turkeys?
Good point. Every Thanksgiving.
Every Thanksgiving, they pardon a turkey.
Gobble turkey.
Important to note.
Turkey gobblers.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about.
But outside of that.
Why is it always rich people?
Look, I know that they've done other people in terms of just regular average Joes or people that are in different situations, but the ones we hear about are the very wealthy.
You know what they need to do now? They need to take everybody who's currently incarcerated because of marijuana-related offenses and let them out yesterday. That's what they need to do. What do you think of that, Curtis?
Right on, brother.
All right.
Boy, I think a lot of 49ers fans would take jettisoning Jed York, who's DeBartolo's nephew, I believe.
Yeah.
I think it's his
nephew-in-law.
Okay, because his mom is Denise DeBartolo York, I believe. So, either way, all the 49ers fans would get Jed York right on out of there
and take
Eddie DeBartolo back, right? In a heartbeat.
Now, that'll be interesting. Would that even be on the table?
Probably not.
No. But it is loosely still his family team, but he's just had to separate from it. So, but, yeah, I don't know. But now his crimes have been pardoned. Really complicated.
He wasn't in jail, DeBartolo.
Correct. He's been absolved of his misgivings.
Right. Le'Veon Bell, a potential trade candidate, despite the fact that he keeps telling everybody he wants to remain a Jet.
It seems like such a weird relationship. That you just constantly, you have one, a very, very talented football player in your locker room and at your disposal, but yet there is just constant talking from the Jets within that organization about trading a player that you just signed to a massive lucrative deal. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Either get on board or get out. I don't understand why they're holding on to him as much as they have. Or they just, you know, keep floating it out there until they get the final trade that they're looking for, or is this just constant drama that, you know, surrounds New York like at all times with the media there? I just don't understand it.
I don't get it either. You think he's got anything left in the tank, Bell? I mean, I think
he's absolutely he does. I don't think he's.
It just seems like he's such a problem everywhere he goes, whether it's his fault or not. Like, he just doesn't fit anywhere.
Today's his birthday, interestingly. So I just add a little context.
Happy birthday.
28 years old today, 90s baby. And he rushed for 789 yards last year with the Jets.
That's
what I'm saying. It's an organization
offensive
thing.
Line.
Like, you wonder, I think some of the problem is that a player an especially high-profile player will probably be an expensive player because that's why he's so exceptionally famous. And sometimes the teams that can afford to spend the most money are going to be bad teams. And when a player like that goes to a bad organization, it feels like it just becomes worse. So you wonder, well, what would Le'Veon Bell look like, not just necessarily with Seattle, but with a good offensive line or a good organization or an organization that's just a very strong culture and functioning well? I don't know. Like, how much of it is the Jets, too? That's a big part of that recipe.
A lot of it.
What is on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
The Mariners' full squad reports to Peoria today. That includes, by the way, one Mitch Haniger, fresh out of the, what do you call it, the surgical room? What do you call it?
The operating room.
The operating room.
Fresh out the OR.
Like, literally fresh out of the OR in his OR scrubs. Or gown, I guess.
Surgical gown.
Right, in his surgical gown.
His nurse is probably in scrubs.
Right, he will arrive tomorrow with the Mariners. So the full squad's there. Haniger expected to join them tomorrow. And the games themselves will start Saturday, and you'll be hearing those mostly tape delayed on our air as we go forward this month. All right, coming up next, is it important to sign certain Seahawks free agents before others? We'll talk about that on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
We've got all these free agents with the Seahawks that we're worried about. Maybe we're not worried, but we're tracking them, certainly. Is there, if you're Pete and if you're John and you're looking at the entirety of what your offseason is what it's going to be, is there a certain, like, order to it all? When we look at Mike Iupati or Josh Gordon or CJ Procise or whoever, is there an order to having to sign certain guys ahead of others?
Yeah, there are. I think when you talk about guys that you've had for a long time, I think, you know, conversations that they've had with Jermaine Ifedi are obviously, you know, important ones. George Fant, guys that Jaron Reed that have been in their program for quite some time now, those are going to be more on the forefront than it would be necessarily, you know, Luke Wilson, Jacob Hollister, CJ Procise, Michael Kendricks, guys that, you know, haven't been a part of their program.
So,
but
you think that's how they...
I think it's part of it. Okay. The other side of it is Clowney, right? You've got a top priority free agent, right? And with Clowney, I think that there's zero question as to who is the most important free agent for them to try and retain. And obviously, he's going to be at the top of the priority list and conversations in terms of how they want to be able to get it done. And it's going to be interesting overall to see who ends up signing first. If it's a lower level deal, it's an easier deal to get done versus like a Jadeveon Clowney, because that will be more complicated, and obviously he's going to want to test the free market. So it all kind of factors into the mindset of what the players are too, because it's interesting as you look at Clowney, you look at Reed, you know, Ifedi, Fant. I just, you know, reading a couple names, you know, that are unrestricted free agents. I think those are guys that want to really test the open market and see what's out there for them. Whereas I look like a guy like Jacob Hollister, he's a restricted free agent, so he doesn't have as much wiggle room. But if he was open to the market, he may want to test the market, but really he wants to come back to Seattle.
Right.
He's had great success here. It really worked out for him. He really wants to be back. Whereas for those other guys, they're looking for the best possible situation for them playing wise and money wise. And whether that's in Seattle or not, they're not going to be taking any discount.
Yeah. I don't know that this is always the approach, but I would think that sometimes the order in which you sign free agents can add an edge to a deal that you can offer that another team can't. So, you know, it's one thing you could tell any free agent, hey, I can give you $20 million per year. I can give you $22 million per year. I can give you $25 million per year, whatever it is. you can make a competitive offer if there are other teams out there. But one thing that Clowney said at the end of the season is he wants to go to a contender. Okay, so that's one thing that you can have in your court. And that's one thing that those teams out there with money to spend can tell him we're a contender. And when you tell him you're a contender, okay, well, here's why. And I think that when you see the order in which free agents are signed, and both Jake Heaps and Brock Heward kind of floated this theory that it could help sign Jadeveon Clowney if you can add to that defensive line or that defense before you re-sign him in a way to add edge to whatever contract you can offer him. Because there are other teams. He's going to be one of the top, if not the top, pass rusher out in free agency. So there will be teams who are offering just as much, if not more, than Seattle's willing to offer. So what you also want to be able to say is, well, we've got someone on the other side, and you're not going to be double teamed throughout the entire season because we've got someone else that we're adding. And so I think that that's one thing that could dictate the order in which you sign people. And obviously, you don't want to sign a guy that you don't need.
Breaking news from Adam Schefter. Former Panthers tight end Greg Olsen is signing a one-year, $7 million deal that includes $5.5 million guaranteed with the Seahawks, per source. Olsen visited and negotiated with Buffalo, Seattle, and Washington, but felt most comfortable with the Seahawks.
Am I happy that Adam Schefter so rudely interrupted my point? No. Am I very entertained and intrigued by this signing? Yes, I am.
We knew it.
First of all, 80s babies. That's a plus. Secondly, I think this actually is great news. I don't think it means that Jacob Hollister isn't back. They don't have a ton of depth at tight end. I think it's good to get him in this building. Jake, you were all over this. What do you think?
Well, this is awesome. I really think that Greg Olsen being here is a situation where it adds depth, but it adds proven playmaking ability. Greg Olsen, everybody can talk about that he's 35 years old and that he has had some injury, you know, issues over the last couple of years. But last year I thought was, you know, a good year for him to get back in terms of answering some of those injury concerns and whether he can continue to play at a high level, in which he did. Now you add a proven player like Greg Olsen who can absolutely still stretch the field, who isn't just a possession receiver type of guy, and he is very clutch with his hands, but he's a guy that can make plays and is a great route runner, and you can use him in a lot of different aspects. So
how good of a blocker is he?
He's a very good blocker. Okay. He's a very sound blocker. He's not to the level of Will Dissly, but he is a very good run blocker. He's tough. He's not going to be a liability in any sense of the word. He's going to be very good. And so what it does is it allows you, if Will Dissly is able to stay healthy, is it allows you to have a very dynamic 12 personnel package with Greg Olsen and Will Dissly out there on the field together at times. And so it's not just a run-heavy formation for the Seahawks like it has been with George Fant and Will Dissly or Luke Wilson on the field, and there's no true threat at the tight end position down the field. Now you've got Greg Olsen. You've got Will Dissly, hopefully healthy. And if you can retain Jacob Hollister, I love that tight end room in terms of the dynamic ability that they have to catch passes, and then also between Greg Olsen and Will Dissly to be able to run block. So I think this is a very good pickup for them. I think the deal is very reasonable in terms of, you know, $5.5 million guaranteed with incentives that reach up to $7 million. I think this is a very good move for the Seahawks, and one that I know that Russell Wilson's got to be very, very excited about.
I like the player. I like the position. I think I like the money. 1 year, $7 million. With Will Dissly, though, and you mentioned putting both of those guys out there at once, I think that could be interesting. I hope if Will Dissly is healthy, this doesn't end up taking away snaps for him. Because what Will Dissly provides, just with his age, his ability, I mean, that had a lot of promise there. Greg Olsen, I think, has the potential to still be able to be a great player out there. And if he is, that could take snaps away from Will Dissly. This isn't like bringing in Ed Dixon and saying, all right, well, whatever happens, happens. This guy's still a player.
Do the Seahawks often use two tight end sets?
Yeah, they do. I mean,
do they?
They do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about it when they had George Fant in, when they had Will Dissly.
Yeah,
those
guys aren't both pass catchers at the same time.
They're not, but that's why it's so exciting, is because now you add two guys where you can play 12 personnel a little bit more, where you have guys that can block adequately, and then also can be dynamic pass catchers. It puts defense is in more of a bind when you talk about philosophically what this offense is designed to be. This helps make your offense that much more dynamic. And also, when you talk about Will Dissly and his health and worried about snaps, to me, I'm not really concerned about it because Will Dissly hasn't even played through an entire season yet.
Jake, I'm worried.
I think that overall, you bring up this topic all the time about Chris Carson, about trying to manage, you know, his workload. I think that this can be very beneficial for Will Dissly in terms of Greg Olsen and Will Dissly working in tandem and them allowing each other to really spell one another. I don't think this is one thing where I think Greg Olsen comes in and is your day one starter on paper, but Will Dissly and him are very interchangeable in this aspect, and I think it's a very good move for the Seahawks and a smart one for them to pick him up, and now you're not having to worry about spending draft capital potentially at the tight end position. I think it makes everything a little bit more clear in terms of how they approach this offseason now.
Okay, one more time, the breaking news from Adam Schefter of ESPN. Former Panthers tight end Greg Olsen is signing a one-year, $7 million deal that includes $5.5 million guaranteed with the Seahawks per source. We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
Greg Olsen is a Seahawk for $7 million, 1 year, $5.5 million of that guaranteed. The man played 14 games last year at age 34. What else do you want? We are set at tight end. This guy's going to go out there and as part of a, what'd you call it, part of a platoon with he and Will Dissly and Jacob Hollister. Is there one more guy in there?
Luke Wilson's an unrestricted free agent. But Jacob Hollister's restricted.
My
Ed
boy
Dixon.
Tyrone Swoops.
Oh, yeah. There you go. And adding a little bit of context, Adam Schefter tweeted right before we hit break that Greg Olsen really liked Buffalo and Washington and strongly considered both, but the lure of playing with Russell Wilson in Seattle was just too strong, and the $5.5 million doesn't hurt.
You know what? I thought that Ron Rivera might be a factor in him maybe going to Washington because he played with him for so long in Carolina. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go to Washington, you don't want to go there right now. You want to go there in like 2 years and see how things are working there before you do it. And Greg Olsen probably doesn't have 2 years to be messing around. So why not go to the team like a Seattle or a Buffalo where you've got a better chance to get to the playoffs, position of need, the whole thing. It makes total sense, I think, here in Seattle. By the way, Russell just tweeted out what I'll call kind of a strange picture of him and Greg Olsen, if you want to go to Russell's Twitter page here. It's him. I think Russell may have a ponytail, but he's facing directly ahead, so I can't quite tell. Then you've got Greg Olsen behind him.
Oh, that
in
one
a button
was
down plaid shirt, beardless.
That one was. Was that from the first?
Yes.
I think people are just retweeting that.
Yeah.
One. Oh, but he did. No, he did tweet that out before the signing. Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm not saying that he just tweeted it out like right this second, or that the picture was taken right this second. But yeah, good. I'm glad the Seahawks are off to a good start here.
Yeah, I think this is a good start. I think this signifies a lot of different moves. I think this is a good domino effect here because really the tight end position was of one of serious need, and I think that there also is some interesting conversation around was this a smart move? And I understand, you know, people being hesitant about signing a guy who is at age 35, and over the last 3 years there is some injury history. But I look at this last year and for Greg Olsen and playing 14 games and being able to finish healthy, I think is critical in knowing what Greg Olsen can provide to the Seahawks.
And he can provide less than that in terms of stats next year.
Right.
He can give you less than that, and you can still be happy with his production, regardless of the money you just gave him.
You can, but I do think that if Greg Olsen, let's say, you know, in terms of production or matching, if Greg Olsen is playing 14 games for the Seattle Seahawks, in comparison to the Carolina Panthers, I think Greg Olsen, you're looking at a, you know, statistically, he's not just providing, you know, 400, 300 yards, being a role player. I think he's a dynamic role player for you, along with Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. He's a guy that commands respect every time he's out there.
Yeah, but we know that pass catchers on the Seahawks don't generally have huge reception type numbers. Right? I mean, how many catches do you think he's going to end up with next year.
Well, Jacob Hollister was around 40? 40.
And he wasn't even activated for the whole season.
And how many did Olsen have last year? 50-something?
Yeah.
I think
like I just said, if he ends up having a little bit less than 50 and his yardage would go down too, that's acceptable.
Right.
Yeah. But I think what people... No, go ahead, Jake.
What I was saying is that if he's playing 14 games, his production is going to be more than that. I think that he's going to be right around that 50 to 60 reception mark. 500 to 700 yards in that aspect. I think people really miss out on when you watch this guy play and you watch him on tape. He is a dynamic player still. At age 34, 35, he can still stretch the field vertically. So he has not lost a step. It's just a matter of is he like the 2 years previous to this year? So is he the 18-17 version of Greg Olsen where he's very injury-ridden? Or are you getting a guy who's starting to get healthier in 2019, 2020 is healthy? If that's the case and that's what the Seahawks are looking at and banking on, I think this is a great, great move for them.
So you think he's going to be their third leading receiver next year?
Potentially, yeah, depending on what they end up doing
that's
in the draft.
Hollister
but
was.
Yeah, I think that he's got a great opportunity to be that guy.
Yeah, but Hollister caught 41 passes. Olsen's 35 years old. I'm not expecting him to just walk in here and catch 50 passes.
He is a much better player than Jacob Hollister. Much better player than Jacob. I love Jacob Hollister. He is a much better player than Jacob Hollister. It's not even close. They're not even the same stratosphere.
I get why there's doubt about an older player, but one thing I will say is tight end, in my mind, is not at the top or even in the top 4 or 5 of Seattle's priorities this offseason. And so you're not going to spend all your money there. And I think that if you're looking for a guy, and obviously, like, we're going to keep watching this and we're going to see how that unfolds, but if you're looking to add a difference maker, it'll cost money. If you're looking for, I want a 25 or 26-year-old tight end instead of a 35-year-old, well, add to that $7 million or $5.5 million figure or deal with the fact that other teams are competing with that offer too. So you've got to pick and choose where you spend a lot of your money. If you're spending $22 million on an edge rusher, you can't afford to spend a ton of money on a tight end. I think what you got is a proven commodity. Who knows how much he's going to play, but you know what he can do, and you know he can at least contribute something.
I'm right. I'm 100% behind this move. I just feel like you guys, or maybe Jake, is just overly excited about what the expectation should be. I'm trying to temper that a little bit because the guy is 30. Is he 35 now, or is he going to be 35?
In March 11th.
So basically he'll be 35 come the start of the season. Hollister had 41 catches last year for 349. In 14 games last year, Olsen had how many catches?
52, over 50. I believe.
52? So we set in the mark. We assume that he's going to just automatically duplicate that. A guy who was thinking about retiring and going to the broadcast booth is going to go to a different team, a team that doesn't throw it nearly as much as what he's used to, and he's going to come in here and automatically catch 50 balls.
Carolina was a running style team. We're talking about Kyle Allen versus Russell Wilson here. You're talking about a player in Jacob Hollister who I really like, but he was limited in the role that he could actually play. I'm not saying Greg Olsen is going to come out and be a Pro Bowler this year, but what I'm saying is that he can provide a very dynamic option for this offense that they have been looking for in Will Dissly. Between him and Will Dissly, I think that there is a great chance that you've got a more dynamic tight end group now. And Greg Olsen, people are laughing, 35 years old, hasn't lost a step. That's funny. It's true. You watch the film, this guy can still play at a high level. He still is a great catching the football, can get on people's toes, runs great routes. So
when do you have time to watch Carolina film?
Plenty of time.
Because you were sick this weekend? Is that what it was?
It's just what I do. And I'm telling you that Greg Olsen still has the ability and capability of playing at a high level. If he can generate those stats with Kyle Allen and a dysfunctional Carolina team last year, I think that he can do great things here in Seattle. I'm not guaranteeing it. I'm just saying that there is a great opportunity here.
We did it.
Man, that show just went...
What a signing.
Jake, are you happy with that show?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you happy with the last 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Great conversation.
Because I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch some film.
Let's do it.
Somehow.
I hope everybody does.
Yeah. Watch some Love Island. Watch some Greg Olsen film.
Can we get Greg Olsen on the show? No.
You don't know that, Tom.
No, we can't. We're vermin around here. All right, see you tomorrow. 710 ESPN Seattle.